Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. And Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah.
First episode of the new year.
Yay, 2014.
Man.
Just in case everybody out there forgot.
For the vaults of time.
Hey, it's like a little time capsule.
Yeah.
Like, this is what they put in? What is this role-playing game? Oh, I started reading the French one.
That's convenient.
The Legends of the Five Rings book series came out years ago, called Seven Scrolls.
Mm-hmm.
Had you read it before?
Yes. Yeah, I guess it's called, I don't know, maybe it's not called Seven Scrolls. Like, each book is like first scroll, second scroll, up to the seventh scroll. Yeah, and each one is like the lion, the scorpion, the crane.
Ah, so they divided it by clan.
Yeah, the seven great clans.
These are storybooks, not like source books, yeah?
Yes, yeah, like storybooks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Those things you used to read as a kid.
Yeah, my dad sits there and reads it to me.
Sorry, that's the first thing that came to mind.
And then the lion forced the younger lion to commit seppuku.
What's seppuku? Yeah. Oh, well, let's turn the page. Let's not look at that picture.
Does he use the funny voices? Time for you to cut your stomach.
Now, son, I don't want you to kill yourself, but if you are going to do it, none of this pills BS. It's got to be like cut through the stomach.
Ah, yeah. I remember when my dad had the seppuku talk with me, too.
Now, always make sure you have a second to cut your head off, because seppuku is incredibly painful.
Little safer than girls.
Man, imagine that. There'd be like little trails of blood all over the place. That's what the symbols would be. Oh, he's reached that age where he's experimenting with seppuku. All right, I thought that was funny.
No, it wasn't bad, actually.
I know. It was, yeah. Sorry. There was a strange noise coming from my sink, so I turned away for a moment.
I don't have a strange noise excuse. So I just didn't laugh. Even though I was like, oh, yeah, that's all right.
Chris grabbed it before you did laugh. Like, oh, crap.
the old sink excuse.
If only we were beatniks, I could have just done this. Giving you, like, a little snap.
Yeah. I forgot to mention it before, but I started watching a new TV series that's really, really good. You guys might have heard of it before. I think it's called True Blood.
So you had time by yourself over the holiday, I'm guessing, then.
Well, yeah. I mean, my wife's up in Tokyo on a business trip for a week, so I have had time. And, yeah, I've watched the first season so far, and, yeah, it's you guys are right. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And you also, I think it was you who said it, Wayne, but I absolutely agree. Whoever wrote this is definitely a World of Darkness player.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank on the author's name, but I'm pretty sure it's based on the Southern Vampire Mysteries, and I maybe have butchered that title, but I'm kind of interested to read after watching as much True Blood as I have.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just kind of one of those things, like you want to see how different the book is from the adaptation.
One more season to go. Pretty excited.
Yeah, you can skip season 2, Chris.
Well, really?
Yeah.
No. Season 2, the main storyline Wayne and I aren't fans of.
Uh-huh.
To put it mildly.
Right. No, I guess I have to justify that so I don't get accused of just throwing that out there.
Still bitter.
Yeah, it's a bit out there. I don't want to ruin it for you, but if you take the kind of mythologies that they tie into True Blood, this is, in a sense, creative, where it's an unusual mythology that they bring in for season 2.
Uh-huh.
But the story didn't seem to be as rich or as engaging as the amount of time that they devoted to it.
Interesting.
But they have a secondary storyline with Jason Stackhouse, which is really good, actually. And the characters that they introduced through that storyline come back in later seasons. And I think it's, of course, when you see the origin or like the full story, you know, the full history of certain characters or of all characters, it adds to the richness.
Huh. Well, you know, actually, that's kind of how I felt about the first season, only having watched that so far, is that the end, the reveal about who the murderer is, that's kind of the mystery of the first season, was actually, it felt really thrown together. It's kind of all of the clues that the murderer was just all there in the final episode. It felt like they didn't plan anything from ahead. But all of the secondary storylines I thought were fantastic. The whole world that they build up is really, really interesting, and the drama within it. But yeah, the main storyline didn't hook me like the rest of the, just everything else did.
Yeah, well, then maybe season two will feel kind of the same.
Same.
Yeah, I was much more interested in the secondary storylines of season two than of season one. But watch it, because as Lyle said, it does give you character background and develop characters, and you know, you will miss stuff skipping it, so ignore what I said before, as usual, and just kind of power through it.
Will do.
Yeah. Speaking of TV, I'm on the last season of Spartacus, about halfway through that.
Oh,
which is great.
I think you're ahead of me then. I've watched a couple episodes of three.
I'm on five right now.
That's just a fantastic show.
Yeah, I was saying before the episode that those guys should have deserved some sort of Emmy for writing, because they use the Latin syntax, and it really adds to the dialogue, you know, and then they, you know, mix that with modern curse words and that. Yeah, it's pretty good. Really engaging. It draws you in.
Did take a little bit of getting used to. I mean, not in...
Blood and how stylized that is. It does take a little bit of getting used to the... I mean, what they've done with their budget. So they, of course, they're going to use a lot of CG and... But yeah, you certainly get past that. I got past it probably about two or three episodes into the first season.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, watching the first episode, you're kind of like, oh, whoa, this looks a little weird. You know, even for someone for me who liked that kind of visual style of 300, you're like, stuff looks kind of fake. And then by the second or third episode, as Lyle said, you're like, that's what the show is. It's kind of like...
It's theater.
Yeah, it's theater on the big screen, essentially. Mm-hmm. Even the way they kind of talk, it's... Not Shakespearean, but it takes you a little while to get into it. And then after, you know, three or four episodes, you're like, yeah, I'm really digging this, because it's different and distinct and makes the show.
That's exactly how long it took for me as well. Because I think I watched the first episode and I told you guys, it was looked kind of weird. And I was like, shut up and watch more episodes.
Yeah.
It got better.
Yeah. Or you just kind of get used to it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you start to get a feel for what they're going to present authentically and what they're going to present theatrically or dramatically. And then you, like, appreciate the mix and the style. And they're actually really consistent with that. So, like, we look at the costumes and that, and I think that's where they try to be a little bit more authentic, except for the nudity.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, you appreciate that side of it as well.
No.
The dramatic nudity. Very theatrical.
I know we discussed that before, but for me, like, unless it's front and center, the nudity kind of fades into the background just because there is so much of it. But it's kind of, at least in my mind, most of the time it's appropriate for what's happening in the actual scene. So.
Yep.
I mean, I was worried you were doing a little beatnik clap there again, Lyle.
A little snap.
Yeah. <they're...
laughs> Well, actors always say that the sex scenes and the love scenes aren't that sexy or sexual. Well, interesting that I would mention about Spartacus and Legend of the Five Rings before this, since, I just got back from France and Germany. So a little holiday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a little bit more epic, I suppose.
Were you in a gladiatorial arena or something?
France and Germany? What?
Oh, linking it to Spartacus.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. That sounded pretty good.
No, there was a sound coming out of my sink, too. Man, those snaps are going to be a running joke.
New drinking game this episode.
Yeah. So, you know, you hear a lot of the guys go on about Japanese women and how attractive they are.
Right.
I do hear that.
Yeah. So, I don't know, like, French women are, like, really attractive.
It could just be the exotic thing, since, hey, being in Japan, you know, we see Japanese people every day, and a lot of them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, when I was in France, I was impressed at how French women carry themselves. They dress up really nicely. Yeah. Their style is good. The way they walk in high heels is impressive. As odd of a thing to pick out as that is, but...
Hmm. Well, having never been to France, I can't compare, but I don't know. People here seem to walk pretty well in high heels.
I don't know.
Really?
They did like the baby giraffe walk here where they kind of stomp the whole foot down at once.
Yeah, I hate that. So our topic was Japan bashing?
High heels.
No, it was about French loving.
Oh.
But instead of talking about the women, we will talk about the men. So we're going to talk about the French Foreign Legion.
Yes.
First Warriors episode of 2014. So for people who aren't familiar with Warriors, what we do is we choose an actual group from history, and we pull out elements that we think are particularly interesting about this group of warrior, and talk about how they can be applied to the game in general, to warriors that you might want to play, or any characters that you might want to play. So these aren't exclusively for fighters.
Mm-hmm. And I just said, like, we'll pull out elements that are interesting, or we thought were interesting, but they may not necessarily be unique to that particular warrior.
Exactement.
And with most of our Warriors episodes, we'll try to say the elements in the native tongue. So for the French Foreign Legion, of course, that would be French. But actually, looking at our first element, it'll be Latin. Because that's what the French Foreign Legion uses mm-hmm. for this particular element. And that is Legio Patria Nostra, which is the Legion is our fatherland.
So all that watching of Spartacus did pay off somehow.
Yeah,
there you go. Except there's the F word in between all of those.
French? So for anybody who's not familiar, the French Foreign Legion is a wing of the French army. Comes from the early 1800s, I think. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's a wing that's not there for French people. It's for foreign nationals who want to join up and serve the French armed forces. And if you're wondering why anybody would want to join up another country's army, it is open to pretty much anybody, regardless of background. You can be a revolutionary, you can be a troublemaker, you can be actually a criminal, at least back in the old days. You could be a mercenary or someone who's from a defeated country or a defeated army. And come one, come all, and join up in the French Foreign Legion.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, like, they were originally designed to, as you said, Chris, take people, you know, who were not French nationals, but French nationals were not excluded from joining.
No, and I think it was King Louis set it up, and he did it to actually get rid of undesirables or revolutionaries within France.
Right.
This, you know, actually, because of the way that it was loaded together, do you guys think that the French Foreign Legion fits into soldier as far as the type of warrior, or is it more of like a conscript or mercenary kind of thing?
Well, they're not conscripted, though.
It was still voluntary. Like,
I mean, yeah. I know which one they actually do fit into soldier definitionally, but they don't feel quite right in there. Or maybe it's just me.
To me, they were a soldier.
Yeah, I would say they're a soldier, but I suppose you might see elements of a mercenary with the foreign aspect. But mm-hmm. now they're soldiers. I mean, they can earn French citizenship and that through this. So
True.
I believe the American army or military has a similar system.
Yes, there's not there's not an American Foreign Legion, but any nationality can join up.
And after so many years of service, they would earn citizenship.
Hmm.
So I think as of 2008, the majority of enlisted men are foreign, and the majority of officers are French.
Yeah, I read
that
too.
So that's the composition.
Mm-hmm.
No, but what I really like about this element and what was really exciting about the French Foreign Legion is that, yeah, just like that motto suggests, is that like the past is kind of cast aside, and traditional ties and traditional identifiers like nationality are cast aside, and then you really form a strong brotherhood with the Legion. And that is sort of like you restart your life.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of the Musketeers episode we did, where esprit de corps was really important. You know, kind of this ideal of working towards something, or you could also translate it as morale, or, you know, having this shared goal that really brought the unit together. As you said, Lyle, being able to put something kind of, I guess, above yourself and put, I don't know, other things behind you and work together with people who are, you know, not even of the same country as you.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is where you kind of forget that you are from different countries. You leave your country behind, then it's not France. It may become France if you choose citizenship, but the core becomes your new country, in a sense.
Yeah. And then you may even find yourself fighting your former country or your nationality while fighting for the French Foreign Legion. Mm-hmm. But a lot of Germans found themselves in that situation in World War II. Mm-hmm.
It was kind of interesting because when the French Foreign Legion was first founded, the companies were divided up by nationality, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after that, when they were working for Spain, that's when they were broken up, and then the nationalities were kind of spread around, which again reminded me of the Mongolian horsemen and how, you know, smart Genghis Khan was to spread out all those different tribesmen so that you didn't have these units that were loyal only to themselves because of those, you know, ties of belonging to the same country or being of the same nationality. But instead, by breaking them up, you know, you kind of forced everybody to work together.
And I think one of the things that really stood out for me is one of the situations that happened that kind of exemplifies this Legio Patria Nostra during the Battle of Algeria, when the French Foreign Legion, who were based in Algeria, were being forced to give it up as a colony of France, when France was giving up the colony, that is. The one of the regiments, I think the 1st Parachute Regiment, they actually tried to revolt, a revolution against the French government, because they were so proud of being the Legion. This was their home base. This was, for the way they felt, this was their home country. Mm. And, they fought against the French government.
Maybe we didn't bring it up, but because the initial composition was of undesirables to the French government, they were not stationed in France. Mm-hmm. You know, it made sense. It's like, hey, here's this military unit we've made out of people we don't really like, so let's not keep them in France, you know?
It's a good policy, yeah.
So, yeah, as you said, Chris, their original station was in Algeria, and that became their home. And then, yeah, as you said, during the Algerian War of Independence, they kind of had a little bit of split loyalties there, and I could see why.
Yeah. It's that's also part of what gets into, because in addition to just being an interesting military group, they also have a really good reputation for being excellent warriors who've been through some of the toughest situations in lots and lots of different battles and have prevailed. And a big part of that is where they're based out of. Algeria, I mean, they train in the middle of the desert, an extremely grueling training regimen. So it's no wonder that they come out to be excellent warriors.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense. Hey, here are these people we don't really want, so let's put them out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, if, you know, they do kind of get the worst.
Made them better.
And eventually that ended up working for France, but if it didn't work out, then, hey, that was kind of sound thinking too. Yeah, go stick them in the desert somewhere.
Yeah.
But it does bring up the thing, if you're trying to use something like a French Foreign Legion, you need to have, some sort of setting or the sponsoring empire or government has to be pretty far flung. Either it's a colonial government or some sort of empire with a lot of backwater outposts, so that you can have these legions like far flung. They're not the Praetorian Guard, you know, like right. In Rome guarding the emperor. They're there to, you know, to be on the outskirts, on the frontiers of that empire or that country.
Yeah, often places where the empire doesn't want to send its regular troops because they're too valuable.
Right. Nobody wants to go. You bring up Legend of the Five Rings in the beginning line. Hey, the Crab Clan, they're down there on the wall, you know, across from the Taint, where, hey, nobody wants to be down there, but because... I realize that.
Hey, happens to me too.
I did fine.
No one wants to be near the Taint. You know?
Except the Crab Clan. What does that say? All right. Anyway, you've ruined my very serious point up there. But yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. The serious point with the Crab Clan. Yeah, and the Taint.
And the Taint.
How would crabs get down to the Taint? Just shave it.
I'll wait for the giggling to stop.
Don't know if I can.
Anyway, all right, so changing gears. So I agree that, yeah, the empire has to be pretty expansive or colonial in nature to do something like the French Foreign Legion. But do you think that something like the French Foreign Legion would work if you had, you know, a bunch of different empires that were then kind of grouped into one big one?
Sorry, that doesn't make sense. Sorry.
Okay, like...
Could you rephrase that?
Yeah, sure. So you imagine like a bunch of different kingdoms, and one of those kingdoms is out in the middle of nowhere, and so they've developed very, you know, tough and hardy warriors or soldiers. And then there's a unification process where, you know, all these smaller kingdoms become one, and those soldiers become something similar to a French Foreign Legion. Do you think that would work as well? Or do you think a kingdom would have to be more colonial and send these people out rather than absorb them?
In terms of usage, yes, but not really in terms of composition from that example.
I don't think it fits the element, and it doesn't fit the elements that we plan, but it certainly could be an element of backwater or undesirable location or geography. And that could be an element that we didn't plan, but could be a part of the French Foreign Legion.
Mm-hmm. Or undesirables, the people within.
Well, which I guess could lead into our next element. But I don't think we fully explored what Wayne was talking about. Because if they have this kingdom, that from what you're suggesting is, if they have this kingdom, then these people are from that land. So they would have a connection to that land and a pride that they came from the toughest kingdom that around, or the or the roughest kingdom. It would be like Algerians, and Algerians did fight with the French.
Mm-hmm.
But they had the reputation of being Algerians, or if you look at like the way the British Army.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking the Commonwealth like the Gurkhas, armies, maybe?
The Gurkhas or the Australians or the Canadians, they all brought a different reputation with them.
Right.
And if you look at Canada or Australia, I mean, Australia is mostly desert, Canada is mostly tundra. So they would also bring that reputation of they're from like a really cold area, they're from a really hot area. And that might play into
some reputation of the Canadians.
I mean, they did have a tough reputation.
Hey. World War I, they were considered one of the best armies in the world.
Yeah. Wasn't it during that Stormtrooper episode as well?
Yes, yes.
Yep. And the Australians had a reputation of being very unruly, which, I mean, you can go back to the stereotype of their history.
Right.
But they're Australian. So it's slightly different from the French Foreign Legion, which they are the Legion.
Mm.
And they come from all of these different areas. I suppose, if you go back to your Legend of the Five Rings, is that instead of having one clan assigned to man the wall against the Shadowlands...
Right.
See how you could have phrased that without sexual innuendo? is what you do is that they... Members of different clans then man the wall.
Right.
You know, actually, that's one thing. I just wrote it down in my notes when I was reading about the French Foreign Legion. Seems to be at least a real world version of the Night's Watch from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, you could look at it that way. Except they don't really have that stationary post that they're set to defend. You know, they're kind of sent all over the place.
Granted. Of course, in the I was thinking kind of in connection with your manning the wall on the Shadowlands kind of thing.
But right.
Also,
right.
That with the whole forgetting your past and forgiving your sins. Though, actually, it's kind of a minor point, but I wanted to mention that the French Foreign Legion was not a penal legion, by the way.
That would be my only issue with what you said, but there are a lot of parallels.
Mm-hmm.
No,
but, the Night's Watch, a lot of people did volunteer for it.
Mm.
But a lot of it was people... I guess the Crusades would be very similar to the Night's Watch.
Yeah,
in a sense, the Crusades could be like a mobile French Foreign Legion. I mean, you could do something like that if you had... As opposed to stationing them in backwaters, you have this sort of crusading or mobile attack force.
Hmm.
Well, that is the case with the French Foreign Legion, though. I mean, they're not stationed in Algeria. That they're based in Algeria, and they are mobile from there.
Yeah.
No, I guess an example that I've brought up before was that Warriors of Spider science fiction novel where a science fiction, you know, kind of empire stumbles upon a backwater planet and eventually absorbs this warrior culture, and they're not, you know, the same stock as this galactic empire, but they become its sort of, you know, prominent warriors that are sent out to go and claim objectives and do stuff like that, where they have their own kind of sense of pride of belonging to this culture and where they came from, but their loyalty has also been transferred to this galactic kind of empire. So I think that kind of works a little bit like a French Foreign Legion as well, where they're now accepted into the society, but are still apart from it.
Yeah, there'd be parallels to the way Rome was with the auxiliaries, and you could be foreigners and serve in there, and then you could eventually get Roman citizenship.
So. Right. Mm-hmm. Or desert and start your own slave rebellion.
There's that too.
Yeah. You know. Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Well, I don't think slaves are on the path to citizenship, though. So if you're doing like Spartacus.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you keep working hard, you'll be a slave.
Yeah. Well, if you got to
one of these days, son, none of this will be yours.
Well, if you got to be a gladiator, you could, you know, eventually
earn your freedom.
Free. Yeah. Kill enough people, you can be free. You mean these masters guys I work for? No, in the gladiator bits. All right. I was waiting for it.
I considered it, but I didn't think it would be quite right.
All right. So for the next, and we touched on it a little bit, but the next element is pas question. So no questions. There is some truth to it, but, you know, they don't ask any questions when you join the French Foreign Legion. And you can also enlist under a pseudonym.
Yes. So they ask you no questions and you tell them lies.
Right.
Yeah.
I think until 2010, actually, you had to join under a fake name.
I don't know if that's entirely correct, but I think you had the option. I think you still had the option of serving under your real name or a pseudonym.
From what I was reading, and it might not be correct, it was that up until 2010, you had to join under a different name. But after so many years of service, you were able to change and use your real name. But I could be wrong about that.
Yeah. No, I think. Yeah, 2010 they were allowed to, and prior to that they were forced to use a declared identity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. You were also allowed to claim a false nationality as well, especially if you were French. Though usually you'd have to say like one of the French colonies or kind of pseudo French countries, right. Canada, Belgium, something.
Because
like
otherwise,
that.
Why do you speak French if you're not?
Yeah, exactly.
That could be a bit of a tip off, but we're not going to ask.
Hey, it's funny when you mention that because it's like as soon as they become injured, they can get French citizenship.
Yeah, I saw that. That's cool, huh?
Français par le sang versé. So French by spilled blood.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, although, especially because you can only apply for citizenship after 3 years, but you're not guaranteed. It depends on your character and your service in the Corps. But you get shot and you're right on in, which makes sense, you know? Thank you for nearly dying for our country.
I'm sure there's, you know, degrees. Oh, cut myself shaving while out in the field. Yeah, hey.
You are French now.
Yeah. Bring on the baguette. Yeah. But, from what I read, in modern times, the asking no questions still does kind of apply, but that doesn't mean people are not subjected to background checks. So it's not as if currently you can still just get in. And they let anybody in.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean. There's a bit of mythology behind it. But yeah, they don't want like serial killers and pedophiles to be joining up.
Right.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But again, that's also just a fairly recent development, wasn't it? Back in the olden days, and I don't know if this means 100 years ago or 200 years ago or whatever, they took anybody and didn't ask questions. But nowadays, I think, I'm assuming probably because of the problems that caused.
Yeah, no, it's out of date because of like they do background checks via Interpol. So, yeah, I suppose they wouldn't want, like, terrorists and thing, people like that.
Yeah.
Because that could just be a way for them to infiltrate France.
Hey, that's something that wasn't really talked about in any of the research I did. You know, how often does that or did that happen? Because that's definitely something to worry about. I mean, especially if you start this from undesirables, which I guess leads back to the whole thing of, hey, let's not keep them in France. This is going to be kind of interesting if you take it to like a fantasy or a sci-fi setting, because, you know, even more so than with real world people, there's going to be noticeable differences between fantasy races. So, I think that would be...
An elf saying coming in claiming to be a dwarf kind of thing?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you take it there and...
I'm a dwarf.
I'm an elf. What are you talking about? Yeah. It's Sean Connery.
Sean Connery playing an elf.
Legolas.
I'm Legolas. Legolas.
I'm Legolas.
Legolas. But Legolas the dwarf.
Come on.
You see what I'm doing here is I'm playing Legolas.
You have my bow.
Yeah. Sean Connery playing an elf. Is that any more, you know, outrageous than Sean Connery playing anything else?
Yeah. They call me the elf. Why? Why do they call you that?
Can't you see the pointy ears?
I'm the White Wizard.
But anyway,
you shall not pass.
So, but where are we actually going with that race thing, Wayne? Because a good thing, it's not fantasy, but it's science fiction. It's a comic book series called Alien Legion. That was an amazing series.
Hmm. I'm imagining something like the Green Lantern Corps, kind of.
No. Imagine... Because they don't have powers. They're like the French Foreign Legion in space. In space!
Without the rings!
Without the rings and the powers!
So they're dead?
that's where I was going, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Why is there no air?
That must be pretty tough, though, to do in a fantasy or a sci-fi setting, because if someone is an alien race, it would be kind of difficult to claim that they're not. You know what I'm saying?
Obviously, they're not going to do that. Mm. But they would come from their world, and they escape their world, and they've got a certain background. And
I see.
You know, they're just like, oh, you know, they just ask me no questions. They join up, and they serve in the Alien Legion, which could be, you know, part of some galactic empire or something like that. Or it could even be some sort of altruistic kind of Green Lantern Corps thing. But, yeah, no, it's actually a really, really, really good miniseries. And, you know, unfortunately, like, the only other fiction I can recommend for the French Foreign Legion is the movie... Well, I can't recommend it, but that I can think of is the movie March or Die, which is okay...
Was there a lot of marching and dying?
Yeah, they're marching in the desert. It's a movie that's longer than it needs to be.
Much like there's a trek to the desert.
There's a pretty good battle scene at the end, but it's pretty, a lot of cliches. You know, here's your stereotypical rogue, stereotypical guy who missed World War I, so he joins up, so he's really young. Tough guy who doesn't belong, you know, all of those. Commander trying to escape the past.
Right.
Whereas the Alien Legion is... They do have... I mean, came out at a time when Wolverine was really popular, so they do sort of have the Wolverine character.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. But other than that... Snakes. No?
Yeah, he's got something very, very similar. It's like some sort of wire that's around his wrist. Mm-hmm. And he's got some device so he can, like, you know, like... And then choke a guy or cut a guy's head off with the wire.
Right. Ooh.
Yeah, that's so pretty it's pretty cool. I mean, I really, really recommend this comic book series.
Hmm. I'll have to check it out. But I was thinking, because even in the real world, you are going to be able to tell that certain people were not, you know, from France. So,
of course, I
didn't really see it as any different as spinning it out to like a fantasy or a science fiction thing where, you know, it just highlights all the more that, you know, mentality of pas question, you know, even though you look like that,
you know, it forces you to actually make a richer setting, and that all dwarfs are not X, all elves are not Y, so you are an elf, but there's a lot of different types of elves that are in your world, so you show up as an elf, you claim you're an elf from this type of kingdom, this type of environment, as opposed to the other type of environment.
Mm-hmm. And then even once you've declared that, then the character you're playing is still an exception to that, having left it behind.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think you brought that up during the 13th Age review, Lyle, where, you know, in that game, you can play a dark elf, and they say dark elves aren't really evil, or they can be as kind of evil as you want it to be, because, you know, hey, people always want to play a dark elf, so why not make them playable? And, again, you could do that with a French Foreign Legion. Then, hey, there's a dark elf or a whatever race, you know, in the Legion. And they've joined up and they've proven themselves. And therefore, you know, they're just, well, while not like everybody else, they're more than tolerated. They're a useful member of the Legion.
But you could also play with that in that, like, a dark elf does come with a reputation.
Hmm.
Just like if you show up, you're Russian or you're German or whatever, you're Japanese, and you show up, and you come with that national baggage, at least initially. And that could be something to develop through the story, is that everybody expects the dark elf to be, yeah, what are you escaping? Or why are you trying to escape that? Like, it would be the lot of questions, even though don't ask the questions. But, so that would be a lot of fun to play, I think.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, you know, kind of going back to what I said earlier about watching True Blood recently, like a big part of that show, the subtext, I don't know, it's more than a subtext, it's pretty blatant, is about racism. Of course, it's set in the South, so it kind of mirrors like actual racism, but it's against vampires this time more properly. And that's something you could play a lot with in that kind of a setting, to where maybe society as a whole doesn't like dark elves or doesn't like dwarves or what have you. But, you know, kind of in this group, though, it's separate. You see yourselves as closer, though maybe some people get better treatment by the rest of the empire than other people do. And kind of how you have dueling moralities against that. You know, on one hand, I'm part of this empire that doesn't respect these guys, but also, you know, he's my brother in arms. So how do we handle that?
I guess it kind of even gets into what the French Foreign Legion did during wars, where they would specifically station, you know, units either in or out of specific countries to avoid those fractured loyalties, where it's like, it could be, hey, you know, we're going to war against Dark Elves. Well, better move the Legion over here where they're not involved in the fighting, so the that regulars, they won't.
Let's not put them there. That's really good example.
There's an example where they moved the French Foreign Legion to something, but Belgium wanted to maintain its neutrality, so they asked that the Belgian troops not be moved. I think it was around World War One or Two, and the Belgian troops not be moved with the rest of the Legion, and that's when they around that time they made the French Foreign Legion song.
Which is not very kind to the Belgians.
It's not very kind to the Belgians, yeah. Even though it wasn't really their fault, just that their government asked that don't move out them, so they kept them at the base. And the song is Le Boudin.
Belgians suck, Belgians suck.
Yeah, no, it's in English, it's like they're talking about this blood pudding. So it's like a sausage, but actually they called their bed wrap the blood pudding, or the Boudin.
Oh, that sounds tasty.
Yeah. No, it's kind of red and you roll it up, so they call it a blood pudding.
Like a fruit roll-up.
So they give it to everybody, and it's like, for the Belgians, there's none left. They're lazy shirkers. Yeah, and they repeat that twice.
That is the actual song, by the way.
That's the actual chorus.
Yeah. Not that Lyle made that up. That is a song.
Yeah. And they still sing this, so.
To the chagrin of all the Belgians, I suppose.
I'm sure.
Yeah. It's like, all right, here's the part. I'm just going to mouth this part.
or it's like, well, yeah, well, I got some of that blood pudding right here in my pocket. I'm going to eat it during this part, so screw you guys. I was waiting for that.
Am I making a noise again? That's so weird.
I would have felt insulted if I didn't get snaps on that.
This is kind of off where we were headed for, but I thought that kind of this idea of Pas Question could be really fun to integrate in campaigns that have players who like secrets. And we have our own player, myself as well, but also Yujiro. His characters are very tight-lipped. They don't talk about their pasts or backgrounds very much, despite the fact that he usually makes ones for them. But in this case, everyone would have some kind of secret background. Because, I mean, even if you don't care that it's kept secret, you're still forced to join under a different name. So everyone kind of has two different layers to their characters, the one they show and then the one that they were before joining the group. So I suppose you could dig deep into that, or you could just kind of use that as a setting tool, but yeah, could be fun.
Well, I kind of wonder how much of the ask no questions extended to the individual soldiers as well, you know?
I don't know,
it could be the Legion as a whole, where they're not going to ask you any questions upon, you know, your enlistment, but once you get in, I'm sure people are going to be curious about you, but if everybody has sort of that secret background or something they would prefer not to talk about, well, then perhaps everybody is very aware of, well, I don't want to be asked about my past, therefore I will not ask about anybody else's past. So yeah. I could see that going on as well.
Yeah, I am, me too. I'm genuinely curious as how do they do that? What happens around the campfires while you're drinking? Because I picture these guys as Boy Scouts for some reason, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, it gives a whole new meaning to the asking the questions at the Boy Scouts.
There's ask no questions of the Boy Scout?
No. The recent homosexual issues around Boy Scouts, you know, kind of.
Oh, don't ask, don't tell kind of thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. With the Boy Scouts. Okay. Yes. Way to take it there, Wayne.
Yep. Not so funny when you have to explain it. All right.
So just playing on the idea that they are different and distinct, the French Foreign Legion actually have a distinct march. So this gets into our element of Le Crawl, which is what they call their march. It's slower than the actual regular march the other French troops use. And it's so much slower that they actually have to march behind all of the other troops when they do those parades, you know, where they parade the, showing of the guard?
Right. I know what you mean, but I don't know if that's the actual term for it, but yeah.
Yeah.
Or you could go the putting him last makes sense because you don't want him to slow to everybody else down, but putting him in front and having people walk around could make just as much sense too.
Or just running the rest of the parade slower.
Yeah, I don't think it would have a different impact. You got him in the front and everybody just kind of, all right, coming through.
Through. Play through.
It could show, you know.
Demeans them, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you know, show the precision where, you know, they don't really have to walk around the people. You just, like, have everything timed perfectly so that you could just, like, the ranks just, you know, go through each other.
Or all the other guys, they're like, our march is actually faster, but you never notice because they put the French Foreign Legion in front. We're not allowed to pass them. And we just got to kind of, like, mosey behind them.
Well, wasn't it you had said that the French Foreign Legion, the rhythm of their march is actually what all French units used to do, and they're the only ones who have retained that tradition?
Yeah, they used to march the same as the other units, but then they went back to the original cadence, I guess you would say.
I didn't see that. That's cool.
Yeah. But it gets into having things like that, whether it's a march or everybody's got banners, but they don't have a banner, they got something else. It's something that makes the Legion distinct, where they, when they are forced or they do link up with other units, or if we're talking just any other, you know, any type of character that you're playing, if they're in this kind of Legion, that when they are working with other groups, there's something about them that will still set them apart. Other than, you know, that they come from all these different nationalities, there's something symbolic that they do, mm-hmm. just to help emphasize that. So with the Legion, it happens to be a march. But what you would want to do, I mean, you could use a Japanese style flag as opposed to a European style flag. Hmm. You know, like a, well, I should say, like the samurai style, where they slap them on the back, and they've got those little banners.
Yeah, I was thinking of the back banner.
You could do a unique rallying cry, something like that. I could imagine being fun, because like the rest of the army, you know, they're all, you know, vive la France kind of thing, but you yell out something different, like, we're the Foreign Legion. I wish I had a better example in my mind.
Or Belgians have no blood pudding.
F the Belgians. or you could do something out of a Warhammer Fantasy battle where the High Elves, they have the Phoenix Guard, and they're silent. They fight silently. Whereas everybody else, I suppose, doesn't fight silently, because they don't really say that they have a battle cry, but
their distinctive lack of a battle cry.
And yeah, so they never make a noise during combat. So that's something about them that separates them from everybody else.
Shows that they're tough, too, because they just got stabbed and not a sound.
Yes, just like that.
Exactly. I was waiting for possible snapping on that one.
I think it's just the way you end your sentences. It's like, and it doesn't make a sound. It's like you're waiting for like a huge reaction. And
that was almost the Batman voice there, Lyle. And it doesn't make a sound.
I don't know if I'm insulted or pleased that you are saying I have a deep voice like Christian Bale's Batman.
But just for clarity, Batman was not in the French Foreign Legion.
Right.
Because imagine how awesome that would have been if he was.
I heard there were no questions. Don't ask me who I am.
Yeah, but he's also
Esprit de Corps.
He's also a detective. I can't ask questions. How am I supposed to solve any crimes?
He doesn't say that you're not allowed to ask questions when you're doing the French Foreign Legion. It's like,
you're like in the lunch line for that one. Hey, do you guys got potatoes today?
question.
Pas question.
What are you doing?
Out of the Legion.
Hey, I'm fine.
Thanks for not asking.
So it might rain tomorrow.
Oh, well, maybe get away with embedded questions. I'm wondering what the weather will be like tomorrow. I'm sitting here and I'm wondering what you'll be doing tomorrow. I'm going to the show. I wonder if I'll be going alone. We be going. Sorry. So something distinct, and that brings us to our last element, which actually doesn't bring us there at all. It's not terribly distinct what we're going to bring up, but we thought it was quite interesting, and that is défense active, or active defense. I love it when French is almost like English.
Does make our job easier.
Yep.
Yeah. And what is this act of defense that the French Foreign Legion used, Chris?
Apparently you asked the wrong question.
Pas question!
Let me rephrase that without a huge at the beginning. the act of defense, or défense active, as you might say, is a tactic where you set up your defenses as if they were an offense, but use them in a defensive manner. For example, you'll dig trenches. Normally, you'd use the trenches kind of as ways to leapfrog towards the enemy force. You'd use artillery when advancing upon an enemy force, and set up these things, but use them as fallback positions, so that when you are attacked by the enemy, you can concentrate your forces on them, like you would do on an offensive run. So it's more firepower that you can bring on an enemy than you would normally be able to in a defense. However, the active defense isn't really unique to the French Foreign Legion, but they did use it to great effect in the Battle of Berchem. Yeah.
In World War II.
Yes, in World War II, where the Germans and the Italians were advancing on French Foreign Legion position. And they had very good advance warning of it, about 3 months ahead of time. So they were able to construct these trenches and set up their artillery devices, lots of machine gun nests, and they just covered the area with mines as well, so that the Germans and the Italians had to, you know, really press through each inch of land. And despite being outnumbered almost 10-1, the French Foreign Legion held them off for, I think it was 2 weeks, but I don't want to say that for absolute certain because I'm not entirely sure of it. But it was a very important battle for the Allies because it delayed the advance of the Germans and the Italians to the point where the Allies could reorganize and have a better defense in Africa because of it.
When you were describing it before, active defense sounds almost kind of like you don't allow the enemy to bring, you know, its total weight against you. Where, like, if the enemy is sort of, you know, forming the spearhead to hit a specific point, you not exactly fall back from that point, but, you know, you kind of give that point up and then go hit the enemy where they're not expecting it or much weaker rather than just, you know, kind of meeting them head on.
That's kind of the idea behind it. It was also I think Sun Tzu wrote about it in his Art of War, and I know Chiang Kai-shek used it against the Japanese forces, again in World War II, but it was kind of when the more powerful enemy attacks in force, you don't present a target to them. You kind of shrink away, and you might lose something, but make sure that it's only like in a retreat and only a small amount. If the enemy is spread thin, then that's when you attack them. And if it's something evenly matched, you don't give them opportune targets for it. Basically, you try to meet them asymmetrically on the battlefield. And this specific instance was not the case, because even though they had fewer numbers, they met their assaults pretty well on, but with enough firepower to make up for their lack of numbers. But they did follow the second part of it, where they targeted the Italian and German supply lines specifically in an attempt to, you know, kind of break up the amount of force that they could bring against the French.
You know, since I'm reading Legend of the Five Rings, I guess it's kind of fresh in my memory, but the Crane clan has one of their families, the Dai Doji. They operate, like, they don't fight honorably, as far as, you know, if you look at, like, a samurai culture. But, yeah, they'll do that. They knew the lion were going to attack, so they prepare the ground ahead of time. Right. And they figured, like, this would be the best place for them to camp, so they have all of these, like, pits with spikes surrounding it. So they attack, but then they withdraw, forcing, or I guess encouraging the lion to chase them and then fall into these pits and things like that. Yeah, so... Yeah, the act of defense, yeah, it's the, yeah, I guess you do, yeah, like, you have a great story of, you know, like Helm's Deep or something like that, you know, overwhelming odds against you, and what do, and those little tricks that you use to compensate for that.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, something you can have a lot of fun with, because, I mean, in most of the groups I've played with, the players have an extremely fun time planning for an assault or a defense for it, especially you guys. I think it was, what, we spent 2 hours trying to get into a single cave entrance. At,
yeah,
first level.
That was not fun. That was just indecision.
A bit of silliness, actually. Yeah. There's no active defense there.
Active bickering, maybe.
Yeah.
But
so why don't we climb to the top of the cave and
it's
then
not that big.
Jump down to the why?
You guys, I'm gonna go get a beer when you're ready. I'll be back. No, but Yeah, it's, you know, this gives the players opportunity to kind of set up their plans and their ideas and then see how well it survives contact with the enemy.
Well, specifically if you're doing, like, active defense, well, that kind of encourages them, in my mind, the players to go out and do something as opposed to, you know, you can set up a siege where, okay, well, we're behind, you know, our castle walls. What are we going to do? There's only so much you can do if it's only a... not exactly a passive defense, but for lack of a better term, to contrast with active, yeah, a passive defense where following that active defense, I guess, philosophy, hey, go out and be proactive in defense of whatever it is you're defending.
Yeah, and you see that in all kinds of different media. In fact, the Helm's Deep is a good example, you know, where they're setting up things like the hot oil on the walls and like they're kind of barring up the gates and such. You see it in Braveheart as well, where they put oil out in the field so that they can light it on fire.
Right.
I think that wasn't a defensive situation, but that is an example of the way that you could set up an active level of defense.
Hmm. Maybe it makes that defense scenario a bit more dynamic.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there's that frustration with players where they just kind of feel they're sitting and waiting and not really able to do anything, where mm-hmm. this one encourages...
Yeah, you can pull off some cool moves. Yeah.
Mad skills.
Yeah, definitely play that up. And, I mean, you have this legion of, you know, no questions. So you have the dregs of humanity or society, or multiple societies because you don't have the nationalities. Or you have the multiple nationalities. But also... the idea is like they're always going to be at the edge of or on the frontiers, and it's just like if there's impossible odds, yeah, just send the Legion.
Mm.
So you could see the active defense growing organically. It's like, well, you know, actually we would love to be overwhelming odds against our enemy, but we're never in that position, so we've developed this. Because we've developed it, they're always going to send us into those situations.
Mm. And then it becomes a sense of pride rather than having to go out there and do there because you're the guys nobody wants.
Yeah, but hey, that's dramatic. That's yeah. fun.
Yep.
Yeah, and if you are playing in a world like a Legend of the Five Rings, where you have a certain culture, like a samurai culture, then these guys are the ones that will, you know, forego honor in order to sort of get it done.
Right.
Get it done.
Which could be fun, especially if you're playing in a setting like Legend of the Five Rings, as you said, Lyle, because that's not going to be an expected tactic.
Yeah, they do the unexpected. Yeah. Because we are Legion.
In other words, there are many of us.
Kind of goes against the act of defense, eh? You kill one of us, maybe one, two, it'll still be there. I don't know.
Yeah, kill a couple of us, and there were only a couple to kill. Oops.
And that's it. Say two. We are gone. Yeah. It was funny, unlike the Rangers where, you know, they have the don't leave a man behind, the French Foreign Legion had don't leave your rifle behind.
Yeah. That was pretty fun.
Yeah. I wonder if it's like don't leave your buddy's rifle, because those are expensive, man.
Well, they do use the FAMAS. That's a nice gun.
Well, again, do you think that comes from the idea of these were people we originally kind of didn't want, so they perhaps didn't have the best equipment, so therefore all of the equipment they do have is important, and yeah, guys are important too, but hey, we can get more guys, collect the guns.
I think it's more just don't throw down your gun and flee.
Mm.
They were the first environmentalists.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Reuse, reduce, recycle.
Reuse, reduce, recycle.
Retreat. not retreat. Yeah. I mean, active defense.
It's only the three R's. There is no retreat in our R's. All right, well, that ends our episode on the French Foreign Legion. So we looked at four elements, or possibly five elements, that make the French Foreign Legion particularly interesting. And these elements, of course, you can incorporate into your characters, into your game. And they include Legio Patria Nostra, which is like the Legion is our fatherland, so no nationality but the Legion. We also talked a little bit about being placed on the frontiers or being put in the areas that nobody else wants to go, or the areas that these undesirables will be best placed, or the least danger to the empire or to the country. We looked at pas question. It's like, you know, they don't ask questions, so you're going to get a lot of people escaping their history, escaping their past, and starting afresh. We looked at le crawl. So there's always going to be something different about the Legion, so really play that up and whatever, like somehow symbolically. And finally, we looked at the defense active, or active defense, and just a style of fighting that you can incorporate or even like a mentality that you can bring to this group.
Hmm. Yeah, after doing this research, I thought that was pretty fun and definitely some takeaways to use for our upcoming 13th Age game.
Yeah, because it's going to be a military campaign.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Yeah, and you guys have a blank slate.
In other words, you're not going to ask questions.
Yeah, and you get so the group Chris Wayne and Yujiro are going to be making their own mercenary company.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be as diverse as they want it to be, and it can be as rough as they want it to be.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, thank you for joining us on Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through Stitcher or iTunes, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can follow us on Twitter, you can like us on Facebook, you can join our G Plus community, or you can join up in our forums, which is hosted by Happy Jacks. Merci beaucoup to ces gens. Thanks to all of them. And you can send us an email if you like. That's info@idleredhands.com. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Bye.
So that's no questions, but this is part of the crawl, so...
maybe that's why they go so slow. Just no questions. No? All right. That didn't even give us
yeah, I don't even know what that means. What does that even mean?
Because no one bothers to ask, hey, why do we do it this way?
And that's why they go so slow.
Yeah.
All right.
I thought somehow, that was dictating how, they're thinking is like, oh, how do I open this conversation with a question? I'm walking slow now.
I suppose that makes as much sense as what I suggested.
Yeah, a lot of I have a lot of military culture where they just, I mean, it's really drummed into you that you got to take care of your gear.
Hmm. Yeah. Star Wars, this weapon is your life, Anakin.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I wouldn't have went there, but yeah.
Was that from episodes 1 through 3, the non-existent one?
That's one that Red Letter Media was really dumb because it made the Jedi all about the lightsaber, and that's not what they're supposed to be.
But aren't they about the light? Isn't one of the things you have to make your own lightsaber to become a Jedi?
Yeah, but it's about the Force, not the lightsaber. You're still a Jedi if you lose your lightsaber, despite what the prequels may have portrayed.
But if you lose your midichlorians, well, then you're screwed.
This is true.
Yeah, you have a blood transfusion. I'm no longer a Jedi.
Man, thank you very much for that one, George Lucas.
This mumbo jumbo. What? It's in the blood? Oh.
A mysterious force that binds us
and
particles.
Oh, we got the DNA. Oh, okay. it looks like a Jedi killed him. How do you know? The midichlorians in the blood.
Man, imagine that. Wait.
All right.
Police procedural, and it's like, oh yeah, was it another Jedi, Luke? Really? Really? Because I think Ben Kenobi's dead. We've got the blood.
Drive through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Yeah.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.